Hey everyone, welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast, where we dive into the people, stories, and iconic moments that have helped make sneakers a global phenomenon. If you've ever told someone that you like their kicks, then you're in the right place. Before we lace up this episode, here's a little teaser for you. Stick around to the end of each episode for the last shot question. It's a chance to test your sneaker knowledge and engage with our community. I've also recently started a newsletter to share my knowledge from nearly two decades of experience working in the footwear industry. You can find the link to that below or go to sneakerhistory.com/newsletter for a weekly deep dive into the biggest topics in the sneaker business. All right, now that the business is taken care of, grab your favorite pair of kicks and let's get started with the episode.
Jordan trying to shake off Starks. Oh, what a move!
Against Gill, the crowd on its feet. Allen for the win!
Welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another special edition of the Sneaker History Podcast, presented by yours truly, Robbie Falke. We're sitting here today with my good friend, somebody who's gone through quite a sneaker journey, Mr. Aaron Hankins, who has dabbled in many things on his way to where he is now in the sneaker game. So, Aaron, why don't you just say hello?
Hello, Aaron Hankins. This in the building him. With some coffee, with some Portland coffee in me.
Always. French pressed, proper.
Absolutely.
None of that instant coffee here.
Yes.
But we're here to talk to you about your journey.
Mm-hmm. Who am I?
Who are you? Because your journey is interesting for a couple reasons. I think the biggest one is it'll show kids that there is a way to get to your end goal. Yeah. So you have to establish an end goal first, but there is a route you can take. Just you have to put, you have to lay the foundation of a road, right?
Yeah. You gotta have a map and then figure out where you want to go and then start taking the steps down the path towards your goal. So where should I start?
Right.
I'm an old man.
Right. This, so we're not preachy though. So this is specifically to footwear. So that's why you're on the Sneaker History Podcast.
All right. So the trigger alarm is going to go off here, but my favorite shoe is the Air Jordan 5. And when I was 10 years old, that was the shoe that, number one, I guess to just back up is that, like, I was raised in right outside of Philadelphia and raised by a single parent. So my mom raised me, and growing up, she would pay for my sneakers. So I had a bunch of Bobos until I was like 8 or 9 years old, and I started to see Nikes and I saw Reebok and I saw all these other brands. And my mom was like, if you want any of those high priced shoes, you're going to have to pay for at least half of them. So I saved up my money, and I was able to put down half on the Jordan 5, the black pair.
Metallic.
The metallic black pair. And they came out in 1990, right?
Correct.
Okay. Sneaker History Podcast.
Right.
Because I see sometimes online, like, it says that the Jordan 5, it came out in 89, and it also came out in 90. Now, have you seen that?
I think it's more, like, that's when it might have first been seen, mm-hmm. is the tail end of the 89 season. Well, I guess the beginning of the 89-90 season.
Yeah.
So he wore it in November, December. I think it came out in January, mm-hmm. of 1990.
So, like, that shoe for me, like, there's, like, three things that I always tell people. It's the 3M reflective tongue, the visible air, and the translucent side panels, like those mesh sort of plastic side panels. Yes. I vividly remember taking the shoe and putting it under my bed and flipping the lights on and off to see the reflective tongue, to see it do its shimmer thing. So that was my first, like, Nike shoe. That was my first Nike moment. And from there, I just was like, I got all into shoes, and I, you know, when I could get a job when I was like 12 or 13, I started to collect shoes on shoes on shoes. But for me, it was always about, like, the wild shoes and the crazy shoes. Like, mm-hmm. the Air Max 95 was just another shoe for me, you know, 5 years after the Jordan, like, the Air Max 95 was it for me. The Air Max 95, and then what's the Chris Webber shoe that came out at the same time?
The CW.
With the 4 foot air, like, that was the, in basketball, like, that was one of the first times that you saw, like, the little...
Yeah, the forefront visible air. I believe it was just the CW.
And it was that was also the time when, like, those Nike ads they're coming back out now, like, the team sport ones with the team sport patches and everything.
Yes.
Like, all those things are coming out.
We just saw that on the Jordan 5 Michigan, a little patch on there, shouting out, like, Nike sportswear, like, the vintage jerseys that they wore. Like,
yeah.
The old ad of Chris Webber sitting on, like, profile view of Chris Webber. So that kind of...
That's the origin.
Yeah.
That's where it started.
So, yeah, I mean, that kind of answered kind of the first question, like, what made you fall in love with sneakers? It was... accountability to have to own the shoe
and being able to pick and choose your own. Like, that's the awesome thing, is that everyone gets to choose what shoe they want. They want to wear the Reebok, they want to wear the Adidas, they want to wear the Puma. And when you're growing up and your parents give you that opportunity, they're like, hey, you're in charge now, pick the shoe that you want, pick the fit that you want, do all these different things. And for me, it was like, it was really empowering, and I got an opportunity to, like, oh, this is, I want to wear the funky shoe now. I want to wear the shoe that has the 3M tongue on it. Like, 3M for me is just, it's always been goo goo gaga. So I'm wearing the Jordan 5 and I'm taking care of them. And when they start to fall apart, I actually rip them apart. So I get a pair of scissors and I start cutting the shoe up to see how it was really constructed and put together. And through that process, I started to get into model airplanes. And model airplanes... you're taking all these different pieces and components and you're gluing them together. So I would make cars and I would make airplanes. And to put things into perspective, I'm like a 10 to 13-year-old kid at this point. So, like, this is when people are like, what do you want to do? Do you want to go to college? And since I was fairly good at math and science and I loved sneakers, but I also took things apart, I would take radios apart and do this. Everybody was like, well, why don't you become an engineer? And... I said, okay.
Why not?
Why not? And then I'm like, well, how much do engineers make? Because, you know, when you're a 13-year-old kid, you're focused mainly on how much is this job going to pay me?
Money ain't a thing.
Yes.
Is that, literally, that time frame might have been like, bling, bling, money is a thing.
That's, I'm a little early. The money ain't a thing was like when I was in college, so.
Cash money is a little bit later.
All of that. So I'm all into math and science, and basically my track at that point starts to head towards the engineering path, where everybody's like, Aaron, you're good at math and science. And I start applying to colleges, and I get into an engineering school in Philadelphia for mechanical engineering. And at this point, I still love sneakers, but I'm starting to see that, like, to become an engineer, I'm probably going to have to work in a different industry, because the internet is around, but it's not as well known that there's engineering jobs at Nike. So I never really put the two and two together. So I started to go to college and was collecting more and more shoes. And when I went to college, I started to find this community. And this is like, Nike Talk was like big when I was in college.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a lot of friends that were from the DC area, and they would go to school in Philly. And anybody that's from the East Coast knows that, like, the 95 corridor, like, when you're going from D.C. to Philly, you go up 95 and you go past the Perryville outlets. And the Perryville outlets are, for Philly, D.C., Baltimore, that was where you would go and get the outlet come-ups.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the outlet come-ups nowadays are, like, a majority fakes, or people are trying to, like, you know, play the okey-doke. They're like, hey, look at this unreleased shoe that I found at the outlet. And it's like...
took it off his foot, put it on the thing. Oh, exactly. Yeah, they got it.
Oh, look, I got this for $25. But back when we were going to the outlets, it was like you would get, like, the ugliest Shock TLs for, like, $25. Or you would get, like, some Carolina team shorts for, like, $10. Because it's Carolina, but you're up in the East Coast. Like,
yeah.
Nobody, or I would get all my Florida State gear, like all my Florida State football
gear. No one
gear.
Bang with UNC up there?
Yeah, and that was back then outlets were all about, like, hey, let's take some Minnesota Timberwolves jerseys and let's sell them in Maryland and see if people will buy them. Well, yeah, people will buy the Nike Swingmans, you know.
Whatever. That Wally Zerbiak team jersey.
Exactly, if they're like $15, you damn sure you're going to buy them. So I found out about Perryville, collect more and more shoes. This is actually when I was in college when I started doing the whole Ronnie Fagg, where he's like one to rock, one to stock. Like, I would do that, and I would take duct tape, and I would, the second pair, I would wrap duct tape around the box and put a date on it and be like, don't open until. So yeah, in college, had all the sneakers.
No vacuum seal, that's duct tape.
Duct tape, just duct tape the boxes. That was just me being silly back then. And my whole persona back in college was like, oh, Aaron's the guy with the sneakers, or Aaron had all the sneakers. And this is like 2000 to 2003, so this is like the retro, all the retros are coming out, like the black and white Barclays, the man, all of the 11s were coming back out again in the 2000s, right?
On the Easy, no, they were coming out then. I'm actually going to put a little pause right there, because you just said you were that sneaker dude. You were known as that sneaker dude.
Yeah.
I'm known as that sneaker dude. 1,000% sure anybody listening to this has some friend that refers to them as the sneaker dude. Or you wouldn't be listening to a sneaker podcast.
Yeah.
Like, that's just what it is. Mm-hmm. And I kind of want to pump the brakes, because there's a real transition that could be made from having something be a passion to being a career,
mm-hmm.
or an education, like a game plan through how you're going to build your education. It can be engineering. So yeah. You thought, you know, you're good at math, you like tinkering, you like taking things apart, you want to be an engineer, and you love shoes. We'll get into how those two connected for you later.
Yeah.
But you could be in love with shoes and want to be a businessman, and you could want to, you know, be the next Soul Supremacy and start your own business.
Mm-hmm.
You could want to be a marketer, and you want to help sell the shoes. There's so many different avenues. You can go into, I mean, this logistics, and you could be behind the scenes and how shoes get to where they need to go.
Yeah.
So there's many ways you can make this footwear thing into a career or into your real life.
I didn't realize it until later on in life that me tinkering and taking shoes apart was the part of Nike and the part of footwear that I really enjoyed, which was like, a shoe is assembled, but how did it get to that place? And mm-hmm. how was it put together? And other people, they are more interested in the flipping aspect, or like the speculative value, like you buy it at this price and then you're able to sell it at this price and you're able to make this type of markup. Or some people are all about the colors. And some people are all about the performance. They want to have the best running shoe, or they want to have the best shoe, the best that shoe. So all of those different aspects around footwear, those kind of jobs are available within the industry. I think that a lot of people just don't recognize or understand that they're there. And then me understanding it later in life, I was like, oh, that thing that I really liked to do when I was 10 to 12 years old is something that I can do later on in life that will fulfill me, that will actually bring fulfillment in what I do. So,
and get you paid.
And get you the money too in the end. But it's like, it's having the understand that to be able to look back and be like, what were the things that really brought me joy in life, and what were the things that I really liked to do? Like, some people right now, people that are listening to this are like, yo, I love taking the tongue off of this shoe and putting it on this other shoe. Okay, well, that means...
You're halfway there. I mean, yeah. A quarter of the way there. The curiosity.
Yeah. Or you like, oh, you get this Air Force One and you want to do this to it. You want to add this color to add this mark of your personality and you want to do it like this. Or you're like, hey, I know that I can get this shoe in Kansas and I can take it to Chicago and people are going to love it there. So that means that you understand the markets. And you understand that in one market something isn't doing very well, but in another market it is. Those kind of insights are all of our natural gifts. We all have natural gifts and talents. And for everybody that's sort of on the outside of the industry, they purchase shoes. They're a part of the culture, but they're not within the industry. Like, it's finding what you enjoy doing and connecting it to something that's inside the industry.
Mm-hmm. So it's basically... Like, I'll use myself as an example. I'm a full-time, I work at a bank.
Yeah.
So I also do this. I write on a couple other websites. Like, I took it from, I'm tired of being on the sidelines of a conversation. I want to be in the conversation. I want to help drive conversation. Like,
yeah.
Creating content really is a passion of mine. My degree's in English, so I was fronting on myself. I was like, I went to school for this, and I'm not doing anything with it. It's not my full-time job yet, but you can still take something outside of a passion and take it one step further. So, Aaron, you quit fronting.
Yeah.
That's a shout out to his podcast. What's your podcast called, really quick?
Stonecutters Podcast.
Stonecutters. Go look it up.
Stonecutters Podcast, iTunes, Stitcher, stonecutterspodcast.com.
It's lit. It's really good conversation.
Good conversation.
But you have a whole episode about when you quit front or like stop front.
Yeah.
And you interview some different people and you talk about when they stop front.
Mm-hmm.
So you're at Drexel. You didn't say it, but that's where you went to college.
Yeah. Drexel University is where I went to college.
So you don't have to also go to the Oregons. You don't have to go to UNC Duke to get seen.
Absolutely no.
You can do your own thing. Just learn. Like if you take anything from this conversation, is just learn what you want to do.
Yeah.
And actually try to do it. Like, you're not going to get to where your dreams are by
playing
Xbox.
Action is probably the biggest thing is to learn and then to apply it and to take action from it. And something that you were talking about earlier, like anybody who's listening to the podcast, go on LinkedIn. Go on LinkedIn and type in your favorite footwear company. Type them in there and look at the people that work at those companies. And the people that work at those companies are former bankers, our former mathematicians, our former writers, our former checkout people at the grocery store. And they've been able to take whatever their former job was, learn and apply new things and put it into practice at a footwear company. So
Jermaine, phase two.
Absolutely.
Used to work at Nordstrom's.
Yes.
He slang shoes at Nordstrom. And I know people that used to work with him too. He was the best. He was the best. And he did that for a while, made the connections, had the blog also. So get yourself out there. Aaron's kind of what pushed me into start doing this more. Because if you want people to see what you do, you have to put what you do out there. You have to have some kind of portfolio of any kind. So just try to make a pivot. So Aaron, let's just fast forward a little bit. You were in college. You're out of college now. You got your degree, engineering.
Got my degree, engineering, yeah. Worked for a laser company in D.C.
Frickin' lasers. Yeah. Sharks with frickin' laser beams.
These lasers were the ones that go under the ocean for fiber optics.
Sharks.
So, like, you know, a majority of our data, this is going to be nerded out for a second. So a majority of our data is actually transmitted through fiber optic cables under the ocean. So, you know, the internet and all the things that we plug into the walls and everything, some of it is transmitted through satellites, but a majority of it is transmitted through fiber optic cables underneath the ocean. And you need lasers to basically amplify the signal. So I worked on the lasers to basically send data back and forth over the ocean. And something that was really interesting that happened to me was I had a person who worked with me, she was from the Philippines, and her family invited me to the Philippines. And at this point in my life, graduated college, I probably had over 100 pairs of shoes, and I went and visited the Philippines, and it was the first time that I left the United States. And at that point in my life, I really put a lot of emphasis around owning things and having a lot of material possessions, because I thought that's what would bring me happiness. And when I went to the Philippines, anybody who's been to the Philippines or anybody who's been to Southeast Asia has just seen, you know, poverty and people that don't really have a whole lot. However, they're happy and they're fulfilled. So when I came back from the Philippines, I sold a majority of my sneakers, probably went down to like less than 10 pairs at that point. And I used all that money to travel the world and to just see what else was out there to sort of broaden my horizons and to give myself a better perspective on what was out there in the world.
Mm.
So, yeah. And then from there, the funny thing was is when I was in the Philippines, I met somebody and they were like, hey, do you want to move to Arizona? We've got jobs working at Raytheon, and Raytheon makes missiles and they work in the aerospace industry. So I moved to Tucson with not a whole lot of shoes, and I started working on missiles for, I guess that was like maybe 3 or 4 years that I did that. So I was working on top secret stuff. The things that I can talk about is that basically my job when I worked at Raytheon was giving people instructions on how to put missiles together. So, you know, from the nuts and bolts to the electronic boards, to the rocket motor, to the explosive device, to the guidance system, basically giving people the instructions. So like my degree is in mechanical engineering, so I'm a mechanically inclined person. So basically it was about creating IKEA instructions to tell people how to put missiles together. Did that, did it so well that Raytheon was like, hey, you're doing a great job in Tucson, but would you mind going out to LA for a little bit and helping? You know, we've got some programs in LA that need some help. So I went to LA on temporary assignment for a little bit, and a 3-month assignment turned into 11 months, and I ended up moving to LA. And when I moved to LA, the world really changed for me when I moved to LA. I started to run more, I started to get more active. I met my wife. I had a bunch of recruiters reaching out to me, and when I got to LA, I was really focused on money and titles, and I want to be a manager, and I want to make over 6 figures. And I had a bunch of recruiters, and they found me jobs, and the jobs were the money that I wanted to make, and they gave me the titles, and they gave me all these different things. And it really, once I got all those things, they didn't bring me the fulfillment that I thought they would. Like, I think to bring it back to sneakers, it's like, you want those grails, you want those Paris Dunks, you want those, I don't know, those Toro Red Jordan 5s, or the, what's your grail?
If I had unlimited money, I would probably buy...
He's in the UNC ones.
Those, I mean...
The Euro ones or the blue ones?
I like the Euro ones, but like...
But so the point there is that like...
If yeah, you got too hard to think of. So many shoes.
Okay, so the point here is that you get the Euro ones, and you're going to love those Euro ones for about a week, and then you're going to be over them.
Yeah.
So when I lived in LA, it was like, hey, we're going to give you this fat salary, or we're going to make you a manager. And I was like, oh man, I got my wish. I got a manager title, and you love it for about a week, and then I hated it. And it was just... There was a lot of other things going on with the job and everything, but... It wasn't fulfilling for me. So at that point, my wife was sort of like, Aaron, you've been chasing all these different dreams. You've been chasing the money. You've been chasing the titles. Like, what do you really want to do? And I was like, you know what? Like, I've always wanted to work at Nike. And when I was in working for Lasers, and when I was working for in missiles. Tucson, when I was doing missiles, when I moved to LA, every time I moved, or every 6 to 8 months, I'd go on the Nike website. And I would see a job that was a manufacturing engineer or a mechanical engineer. And I started to find engineering jobs. And I would apply to it. And I didn't hear anything back. And I was like, you know, discouraged. And the we always defeat ourselves. And we're just like, oh, well, I'm not good enough for Nike. Or Nike only wants to hire the youngest and the brightest. And now I'd leave it alone for a little bit. So... When my wife was just like, well, what do you really want to do? And I was like, you know, I want to work at Nike. And she was like, well, instead of applying every once in a while, why don't you really apply yourself? And I was like, okay. And I was like, well, what does that mean? And she was like, instead of just applying to the jobs, why don't you try to build a network and find people that are doing the same sort of things that you want to do and connect with them and tell everybody that you want to work at Nike, because Nike's a large company, and everybody knows somebody that works at Nike. And it's just a matter of finding the right people and making the right connections. And if people can see your passion, they can see the things that you do well, they're going to try to find a place for you at Nike. Or at any other footwear company. You know, I'm impartial to Nike, because that's my spot. And did we do a disclaimer?
I was going to do the disclaimer when we got into right before talking about what you do now. We're almost there.
Let me go to my notes here. So the disclosure here, the views expressed on this podcast are the views of Aaron Hankins and do not reflect those of Nike Inc., Air Manufacturing Innovation, or any of Nike's subsidiary companies. So the time period that we're in right now, like in terms of the story, is... It's 2016, and I'm a manager at an aerospace fastener company. And aerospace fasteners, these are the nuts and bolts that hold your airplanes together. Anybody that's ever flown on an airplane, when you get to the door and you see all these rivets or these screws that are holding the plane together, there's about 20 million screws that are holding an airplane together. So I worked for a company that made all of those for Boeing and for Airbus. So my wife was just like, hey, Aaron, like, you want to work at Nike? Okay, we're going to do this. So I started applying to jobs. And the first job I applied to, the recruiter called me back right away. And she was like, oh, wow, you work in the aerospace industry. You've got a good amount of experience, but you don't really have any footwear experience. And she was like, you know, it's going to be kind of difficult for us to find a place for you since you don't really have any footwear experience. And that got me discouraged. But the minute that it got me discouraged, it also made me want to eliminate the excuse.
Yeah, right.
So eliminating excuses, for anybody that's listening, these are the things that we need to look for all the time. And how do we eliminate excuses is just by going out and doing something, taking action. So this person was like, oh, you know, like this recruiter was like, you know, you really don't have any footwear experience. And I started to do some research and I found the shoe surgeon.
The shoe surgeon.
So this is 2016. So up to this point, like, I think everybody knows who the shoe surgeon is. He was making a lot of customs. I think he had just done like his first band Air Jordan 1 with the black and red.
Yeah.
And on his website, he was like, hey, we're offering a sneaker school. And I was like, hey, this is like perfect timing. I just talked to a Nike recruiter. They say, I don't have any footwear experience. The shoe surgeon is offering a course on how to make sneakers. He had just done a class in Brooklyn, and he was getting ready to do one in L.A.
Because he does construction, too. So the shoe surgeon is, I mean, there's customizers, there's fantastic customizers out there who will paint, recreate on top of the silhouette. The shoe surgeon, JBF Customs, too, will completely take apart everything down to the panel, reconstruct a panel in a different material.
Mm-hmm. Or use different midsoles or outsoles.
Yeah. Zombie stuff. Like, put them Frankenstein. Yeah. Put together.
All that kind of stuff. So, did the shoe surgeon class. And this was the thing is that, like, I was the first one there and the last one to leave for the full week that we had the class. And I took time off of... I basically took vacation time off of my regular job so that I could take this sneaker class, because that was... Like, I knew that it wasn't going to happen for me unless I made sacrifices and invested the time and the money. I think the first class that he taught was like $1,700. And I don't even know what the class is now. Yeah. But the one that I took was for the Air Jordan 1. So we get to the class. We basically deconstruct an Air Jordan 1, break it all the way down to the panels, create and trace new panels. Pick new materials. We had a sponsor, Echo Leather was the sponsor. And then basically create our color blocking and then hop on a sewing machine, learn how to sew the panels together.
Had you ever sewn before then?
I had sewn in like home ec, like back in high school, but this was like completely different because these are post-bed machines. So traditional sewing machines are like flat. And the needle is flat. These post-bed machines, there's only like it's like a platform where the needle goes in, and it allows you to put sort of contoured shapes and things that are more three-dimensional. You're not just sewing flat pieces anymore. You're like sewing around a back piece.
Or you're the side of a pant leg. You're not doing
that. You're doing like these crazy shapes, but then you're also you're stitching together leathers and denims and things that are much thicker, so you need a thicker, sharper needle, and the machines, they move a lot faster, so you have to have like touch. It's almost like you get in a Porsche and you put your foot down on the Porsche. If you've never been in a Porsche before and you put your foot down on the gas, you could peel out and move, right? Well, it's the same
thing. You're running into that median, let's put it that way.
Yes, so it's the same thing with a sewing machine. If you don't have some touch on the pedal, you could mess up your swoosh. You know, you're stitching a swoosh on top of a panel, and it's like, that was interesting for me because, like, not only did I learn how to sew, but I was also like, man, this is what's happening in factories. Like, all over the world, there's people that are stitching together shoes, not just Nikes, not just Adidas, but just shoes in general. And I started to realize that, like, shoe making hasn't changed in over 100 years. Like, the way that we made shoes in the early 1900s is the same way that we make shoes now. Like, there aren't any great innovations in footwear manufacturing. And that was taking the shoe surgeon's class taught me so much that it was like, ha, I have all of this engineering experience. I have all this manufacturing experience from the aerospace industry. And I'm moving into an industry that's still a little bit in the past in terms of manufacturing and construction. The materials and the technologies are cool, but the way that we still make shoes, the same way that we make cars, like we can do all these things to cars, but they're still made the same way. You build a body, you stuff an engine in it, you slap wheels on it, it goes out the door. It's, I mean, like, other than Tesla, who's trying to make cars a little differently. So anyway, that's, shoes are made the same old way. So I take the shoe surgeon's class. I come out, I have a pair of sneakers, I start posting them on Instagram.
What do they look like? What did your ones end up looking like? Remember?
Yeah, I still have them. They're white, black, and red. And what I did was is that I picked the black panels. I picked an organic sort of pattern. So it looked like just, it was organic looking. And then the red was just a very, like, it was a maroonish kind of red.
We'll post a picture of them so everybody can see them.
They're on my Instagram. So, like, this is the... I mean, like, I don't want to make this easy for anybody. Like, you have to put in your work. So, like, you can find me on the internet. Like, I'm out there. You type in my name in Google, it'll pop up. Like, I don't need to give you all my handles and everything. Like, the part of the journey is going and doing the research. Like, anybody who's been in sneakers will tell you that, like, half of the fun is going to the outlet and exploring, or going to the mom and pop store that has the clearance rack, or is like, hey, you got anything left in the back that you didn't throw away? Like, so anywho,
you gotta ask.
Yeah, so shoes done. So then I start applying to more Nike jobs, and now I have the shoe surgeon on my resume.
You started to, so you helped him teach another class, didn't you?
So we didn't talk about that. So I was first one there, last one to leave. And I told Dom, I was just like, hey, like, I want to work at Nike. I told him I wanted to work at Nike. I wasn't bashful about it. Some people were like, well, why don't you start your own sneaker company? Or why don't you work for one of the other companies? And I was like, no, I have a very special story. It's tied to Nike. It's tied to the Jordan 5. It does everything for me. And I told Dom, I was like, hey, I want to make your class as good as it can be. I have a background in training. I trained a lot of people at all the jobs that I've worked at. Let me help you make this class better. So I took notes, and, you know, at the end of every day, I was like, okay, like, you taught people about this, but you missed this part, or you said this, and then I asked somebody else, and they said that this might be an easier way to do it, or we were all trying to get scissors, and there was only 3 pairs of scissors for 10 people in the class. Yeah. So, like, if we all had our own pair of scissors, or if we all had this, it would make things move quicker. And by, like, the third or the fourth day, like, I was helping Dom and Eric. Eric's, like, a really good friend of mine now, Eric Payne. Eric Payne on Instagram, PAYNEERIC, Eric Payne. He's got his own footwear brand now, doing amazing things. But I was helping them and taking notes. And at the end of the class, I was like, hey, the next time you teach this class, can I help? I don't want to be paid. I just want to be there. I'll take notes again. I'll sweep the floors. I'll do anything that you need. And he was like, he's like, let me think about it. And I was like, well, can I help you with anything? Because at that point, I didn't really know anybody in the footwear industry. And the shoe surgeon, I paid for his class. And he was the only person that I knew. And he said, well, I'm moving studios in a couple weeks, and if you want to help me with that, you can. So I came over and I helped him move from an old studio into a new studio, and I didn't ask to be paid, and I picked up big, heavy things, and I asked him, I said, well, what's that? And he was like, oh, that's something that I worked on for Bieber, or oh, that's something that I'm working on for this person. And I'd be like, what's that machine do? Because the shoe surgeon had all of the footwear making equipment. And I don't even know all the names of everything. I still don't know all the names. But he had a machine to stitch the strobels on. He had a machine to stitch the sidewalls. He had a machine to cut the soles, to hot melt then cut the soles off of the side of a shoe. So he had all these different pieces of equipment. And for me, it was like, if I can give him my labor and help him with things, he can provide me with the knowledge. And the knowledge is more valuable than than the time to move him to studios and everything. So helped him move, and he could see that I was reliable, and I wasn't BSing, and I wasn't just like there for a free pair of shoes. Like, I was really interested in trying to learn as much as I could. So then he was like, okay, like, that was his way of interviewing me. He was like, hey, help me move studios. So a point here that we got to make to people is that, like, when somebody gives you an opportunity, you are on an interview. You are on a job interview. When you reach out to somebody and they say, hey, try this, or hit this person up, or you should go talk to this person, they're doing a couple different things. They're trying to see how about it you are, you know, how with it you are, and they also want to feel like they're a part of the process.
Well, you look like a dummy. If you ask somebody for advice, you cannot like the advice.
Yeah.
But you should try the advice. See, absolutely. Because they're giving it to you for a reason. Dom doing it, that's a pretty reliable source. Like,
yeah.
I reached out to Nick Engvall, the one we're, you know, partnering with. I reached out to him religiously because I read his work. I knew his work. He was doing what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
I looked in the mirror and said, well, I don't have really the tools either. I have the drive, but I don't know anybody in the sneaker world with writing. So I messaged Nick like once a week until I love you. You're still bad at responding to messages sometimes. But this kept on him, and he saw that me just asking questions, offering help for free, like, I didn't want anything back. I still don't want it. Like, it's not about getting stuff back all the time. Yeah. So I pushed him all the time. Hey, let me keep sneaker history alive. Hey, let me write there. Hey, let me do this. Hey, this is my idea. Hey, who should I reach out to? And I reached out to the people he told me to. A lot of those people are now my friends also and are allies in what I'm trying to do to advance my career. So
can we, for sneaker history, like, I remember, like, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, this is what we need. Sneaker history, listen to me. We need a website where I can go and I can type. It needs to be like a Sneakerpedia, but better than Sneakerpedia. I just want to go to 1984. I want to see whatever brands are available, whatever shoe is available, a side view, a front view, a top view, the designer, some of the colorways that the shoe may have come in, and maybe the price. Like, I'm like always looking at shoes, and I'm like, that was such a cool shoe. Who was the designer? When did it come out? How much did it cost? Like, to me, part of sneaker history is that, like, and there's certain Instagram websites that are starting to do it now where they're just like, archive DNA is showing you about old Nike shoes, but, like, is there an Adidas one? Is there a Puma one? Like, just like something like that to go back and show people, or the, you know,
Sneakerpedia was one for a minute and it went away.
Yeah, but the interface sucks, and it's like,
bad.
Sorry guys. I mean, you need that honest feedback, but, like, there needs to be something like that, because I feel like that would help inform people so much better to be able to, like, or on a Sneakerpedia, be able to click on, what's Eric Avar? You click on Eric Avar and it drops down and it shows you every shoe that he was a part of. Not necessarily the principal designer, but something he was like, oh, Eric Avar played a part in this shoe, or a part in this design. Or, I mean, like, Tinker's Wikipedia page would be like
ginormous. Well, Eric Avar helped Tinker make the original Huarache run.
And even some of those stories can be told in sort of the Wikipedia style, where it can be like, this is the story of the shoe, this is what happened when it retroed. But that's, like, a lot of work for another time.
No, I mean, maybe that will inspire somebody who's listening to
get on it.
Start making that. We'll help you. Like, I will be more than happy. And Aaron will help you.
We will support that. And if it's done in a Wikipedia model, anybody can go in, or certain people can go in and edit and update it. So don't think that you have to have all of the images right away. Like, post the picture of the original Huarache, and then other people will post the alternate colorways.
Yeah.
Or people will post the PEs of it. You know, like, this, like, that's, I probably should stop talking, because now I'm talking about things that could make us money. So.
And, like, it's a whole other thing. But, like, you got to, like, you always kind of want your stuff or whatever you put out into the world. You want to be a resource. Like, Nick talks about being a resource.
Yeah.
Like, you want somebody to be able to Google or to go into a wiki forum 5 years later and get the designer name accurately. You know, what the MSRP was. It was random shit. Like, stuff that, we're going down a rabbit hole now.
So to go back to Dom, like, The other thing that I wanted to talk about was, like, I took a course called Alt MBA around the same time that I was trying to get into Nike, and I was trying to figure out my Nike journey. And with Alt MBA, what I learned was is that I needed to create breadcrumbs for other people. So I created a blog, AaronEHankins.com, and on my blog, I started to post stories about why shoes were important to me, why this shoe was important to me. And it's not to the level of writing that Robbie or Nick or some of these other folks can do, but it was my level, and it was me talking about it. And if you go on the blog now, you'll see a list of the top 10 books that I think everybody needs to read if they want to get into the footwear industry. And a lot of the books aren't necessarily footwear specific, but they're just there to give you insights in the 3 or 4 years that it took me to get to
John Wynn's book on there?
Absolutely, John.
Hell yeah.
Yes. And the Shoe Dog is also on there too. So teaching Dom, working with Dom, helping him, he's helping me. Each one of these classes is another group of people for me to be like, I want to work at Nike. I want to work in manufacturing. I want to work in innovation.
Maybe they have a cousin. They have a father-in-law.
Well, the thing was is that Eric, who was one of the teachers with Dom and the shoe surgeon, he's from Oregon. His parents live in Beaverton. Huh. His mom works as an apparel innovator at Nike.
Really?
So, and Eric was somebody that I also created a relationship with. So as I helped them with more and more classes, Eric, we started to develop a bond. And Eric was like, oh, if you ever go to Portland, you got a place to stay. If you need something, let me know. I'll try to connect you with this person or that person. And it's all those little things that, like, people are going to try to help you to achieve your goal, but you have to tell them.
You have to tell them.
You have to speak it into existence. Like, we talk about the secret and the universe. The universe will bring you what you speak into existence.
Is that Mike's secret stuff?
Yes. Oh, it's yes. You always come with these, like, I got to think about them for a second, like these obscure Gatorade.
Mike's secret stuff.
Water bottle. Now, speak it. You say that, but do people know what that's from?
Space Jam, Mike's secret stuff. Some people have never seen Space Jam.
You say Mike's secret stuff, and people are like, what is Robbie talking about? Like,
but, like, so, speaking into existence, he told you, like, there's looking out for people, looking for people, seeking people in the footwear industry, and they can sniff out a fake in a heartbeat. So, like, you had put literally the legwork in, the back work in.
Yeah.
You've been taking notes. You've been helping. Mm-hmm. Everything really... the basis of a friendship and the basis of establishing accountability, that you have accountability to another human being. So that's how you're going to get the connection, because your network is your net worth. But if you're just reaching out to you're just Googling every person, hey, help me. Hey, yeah. Like, without bringing, you have to bring something to the table. You have to show what you can do.
It's kind of difficult in the beginning, because I was even struggling with, like, I want to reach out to somebody, and you want it to be mutual. They're going to give you information. You're like, well, what can I give this person? So I would tell people at first, I would be like, hey, I come from lean manufacturing. Mm-hmm. I come from operational excellence. How can that?
Or like, hey, you listen to Currency. I listen to Currency.
Exactly. Or I like Supreme. You like Supreme. Let's connect over Supreme. And it's like, and you do that for a little bit, and it's like, oh, this is a cool dude. Yeah. Let me give him a little bit more information. Let me help him out with stuff.
No one just wants to organically, hey, what do you do for work? Spotlight, microphone in front of you. Well, I work at Nike and I do this. Well, I work at Umpqua Bank and I do da 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 da.
It takes a while.
You got to finesse it a little bit.
Well, it takes a while to even develop that sort of finesse to be able to talk to people like that. Like, for me, this is something that I learned. It was that, like, the first couple people that I talked to that actually worked at Nike, they were just like, hey, we all don't get free sneakers. We all don't know.
You got to wait in line.
Everybody has to wait in line like everybody else. Like, this is, you know, like, I know I can't get you shoes at discount. No, I can't do this for you. No, I can't do that. And it's like, okay, well, how else can I learn about Nike to know if this is the right place for me? Mm-hmm. And asking different kinds of questions, like, what's the most exciting part of your job? What are the things that you wish were different? What gets you up in the morning? And starting to ask those kind of questions to figure out if it was the right place for me. So, kept applying, met more and more people, and the next recruiter that I talked to, they were just like, oh, wow, you've got all this mechanical engineering experience. You've taken the shoe surgeon. A lot of people didn't know who the shoe surgeon was, and they're just like, well, you live in Los Angeles. Have you ever visited Portland? And I was like, no. And they were like, oh, okay, you probably come and visit Portland. So I come and visit Portland, and the vibe was really cool, and I enjoyed it very much. But the the reason why recruiters or people will tell you to do this, and this is like, I think this goes for any footwear company or any job, is that like half of the job is where it's at and the other half is what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So what you're doing, that's one thing, but where it's at is something that you can't control. So you have to enjoy Portland. You have to like Portland. Like, think about it like this. If you're a creative person and you love New York and you love the diversity that New York has, if you move to Portland and Nike is investing money in you to move to Portland and you don't like it in Portland, mm-hmm. you're not going to be with the company for very long. So the company isn't going to make as much of an investment in you.
Well, it's not just that. If, let's put it a different kind of artistic medium. If you want to be on Broadway and you're not trying to be on Broadway,
yeah,
go to Broadway. Like you got to be in the vicinity to make it happen. Like, I'm not in Portland on accident. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't move up here on accident. I moved up here to eventually get a job in the footwear industry. So, Aaron, they brought you up here. You got to mesh with the culture you're going to be yeah. in, because outside of the 8-9 hours you're at work, yeah. you have to live life. And that living life allows you to meet people at places like Deadstock Coffee and Laundry. And it's a great scene up here. So, and if it's not Nike, like this guy here, Under Armour.
Adidas.
You can go to Boston. Mm-hmm. Under Armour is all, New Balance is in Boston. Yeah. Converse is in Boston.
Well, wherever it is. But it's like one of those things too, is that the recruiters or the people that are trying to hire you, they ask you these questions. They're like, well, do you want to live in Portland? If you say no, it doesn't mean that there aren't jobs available for you. They're just in other markets. Like some people, mm-hmm. I met people when I lived in LA, they were like, oh, I'd love to work for Nike in LA. And I was like, well, Nike has offices in LA, but they're not to the scale yeah. that they are in Oregon. There's probably, I don't know, 50 or 100 people that work in LA. There's probably more than that. But yeah. just to put it in perspective, it's like there's 17 or 18,000 people that work at Nike in Portland. It's a completely different ballgame.
Yeah.
So, so I came up here, and when I got up here, I met Ian. And I think I got this story kind of out of order a little bit, but Ian was really the seed for me. Ian at Deadstock Coffee.
Last week's, or whenever you're listening, Ian from our Colorways interview.
Ian was really the catalyst for me to take things more seriously. When I came to visit him, I had heard a couple podcasts with Ian, and I had known his story. He worked at Nike, worked his way up from being a janitor, and then worked at Nike for a while, and then he left to open up his coffee shop. And I think the more curious thing for me was, it's like, why would you leave Nike? And during my journey to get to Nike, I met a lot of people that left, and they left because it wasn't what they thought it was, or Portland wasn't what they thought it was, or the job that they got hired for wasn't what they really wanted to do. So I met Ian, and Ian was like, hey, you want to work at Nike? Cool. Here's a shoe. Deconstruct this entire shoe, write out the full bomb, and then get back to me. And that was just another one of these interviews where people are always coming to Ian and they're like, hey, Ian, I want to get a job in the footwear industry. Can you help me out? Can you introduce me to this person? Can you introduce me to that person? And nobody wants to introduce a jabroni or somebody that's not really about it. Like, you don't want to vouch for somebody and then not be, you know, a good
word
person.
Word is bond. Like,
yeah.
So, you're not going to go to plate to somebody you don't believe in, or you shouldn't.
Yeah. So when he gave me this task, it was really to see, are you about it? And like, this is that whole stop fronting. It was just like another person that was just like, hey, like, before I give you the keys to the castle, I want to know if you're worthy of it, if you're really about it, if you're just like saying that you want to do it because it seems cool. And I was able to like talk to Ian and just figure out that it was like, no, like, this is really something that's going to be fun and enriching to me. Mm-hmm. So met Ian, came back to LA, kept applying to jobs, and nothing was really happening for me. And in any journey, you're going to hit a moment of rock bottom. And I had been trying to get in at Nike for almost 2 years, and I was about to quit because I wasn't getting callbacks, and the jobs that were posted, like, I kind of fit them, but I didn't fit them. And my wife was like, well, is there anything else that you can do? And she's like, isn't there that guy, Dwayne, and don't they have a school up there? And I was like, yeah, there's Pensoul, but usually the Pensoul classes are like 6 or 8 weeks. And she was like, well, look on the website, and if you maybe you can do 6 or 8 weeks, like, we'll find a way to make it work. And my wife is extremely supportive, and like, it was just serendipity. Like, I looked on the website and they were offering a 1 week class.
Boom.
Kicks class. It was called Kicks Camp. And Kicks Camp was, it was a 1 week intensive, and they had two different tracks. One was color and materials, and the other one was footwear design. And it was basically like a boot camp where you go in, and if you're a footwear designer, you have to sketch out 30 or 40 different pairs of shoes the first day. Second day, you got to go through and do it again. And by the fourth day, you've sketched like over 100 different shoes. On the color and materials side, which is the course that I took, I learned how to create a mood board and learned how to communicate through color, through images, and learned about different materials, neoprene, areoprene, nylon, leathers, synthetic leathers, learned how they're made at the factories, which was really enlightening to me, learned about how, what makes an Air Force One different than a Huarache, like, you know, you've got like this spandex and you've got this versus mm-hmm. another shoe that has like synthetic leather and this and that. Took that class, was in Portland for a week to do that. So that week that I was in Portland, like, I would take the class, and then after the class, I would try to meet people that worked at Nike, or I would try to connect with just people in the footwear industry and just keep telling people that I wanted to work at Nike. And yeah, at the end of the week, I made a lot of really good connections. And I felt invigorated, and I was like, I could live here. I'm learning more. I added pencil to my portfolio, kept updating the blog. More job postings popped up. And then the job that I'm in right now, that posting popped up, and it was like, damn, must have been September of 2017. And December, I had the job. So,
baby amount of context. Dwayne Edwards.
Pencil Academy.
Jordan Brand Executive, designer.
Yeah, he was
for a long time.
VP of design, I think it was.
He 22?
Was, yeah.
21?
I thought it was
early
like,
20s.
I thought it was like from 18 to 25 or something like that. I'm not exactly sure, but he was.
Early 2000s.
Yeah, Dwayne. So Dwayne runs the footwear design portion, and Suzette Henry, who also worked at Jordan Brand and also worked as color materials for Jordan. She worked on the color materials side. So, like, for me, I'm a technical person, and there's a part of the footwear industry that I didn't really understand, which is the creative side.
Mm-hmm.
And why do we color block things the way that we do? And how does a designer... They end up with colors on the shoe, but those colors are an inspiration that come from something else. Like, the latest release, the 270 React.
Yeah.
Right? They did a Bauhaus collection, and the colors are inspired by the Bauhaus movement, and so all that Bauhaus design and all the things that we see on Instagram, these funky looking shapes, all that came from a mood board.
Mm-hmm.
So before the shoe was designed, there was a mood board where somebody said, we want to incorporate Bauhaus. I want to see this color because this is a seasonal color, and I want to see this color because it's a core Nike color, and I want to see this on it, and I want the bubble to look like this. So all those things are represented visually on a mood board, and from that mood board you take all of these visual aspects, which are extremely difficult to talk about on a podcast. You need to see them in person, but you take that mood board, and that mood board gets transformed into a piece of footwear in the end.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically about communicating all these things through a variety of images. You know, like, everybody who's listening to the Sneaker History Podcast should have a vision board. And a vision board is basically a visual representation of what you want in life, what you have, happiness, abundance, the sneakers that you want, the house that you want to live in. You know, there's like a million stories of, like, you know, your favorite buddy Drake, who had the house that he lives in now in Calabasas. He had that as his screensaver on his computer when he was growing up. Like, and he just kept looking at this house, and he was like, I'm going to have this house.
Speak it into existence.
Speaking it into existence.
So, get your boards on point. So you said you got your role now. What's your title at Nike? What do you do?
My title is a process engineer, and I work where we make all of our airbags. We make all of our airbags in a, it's called Air Manufacturing Innovation, Air MI. Mm-hmm. And it's a subsidiary of Nike, and it's basically where all of the Nike products that have Nike Air in them, they're made.
The Vapor Max, the 270, 720,
Nike Air Force One, the all of the Jordans, but every Jordan has Air.
The double stack Zoom for Giannis's new shoe. Do you have any Zoom bags there too?
Just Max. Sure. I think that one's just a heel bag, but the double stack is in the Jerry Lorenzo shoe.
Oh, I didn't know there's double stacks in there too.
Yeah, there's a Zoom Strobel and there's the heel bag in there.
So you're making the tooling, the tooling slang.
No. I'm in an innovation space, so I can't talk exactly about what I do, but it really aligns with the things that I wanted to do when I was a kid, the things that I learned how to do in school, and the things that I'm bringing to fruition now. And it's basically working in the future of manufacturing. So what I do is that I'm out there in sort of the future space. Like, what do we want to do in the future? What are we hoping to do? And do they align with what Nike wants to do, like in terms of sustainability, and in terms of just like...
Basically, you can't make a 1,000 PSI heel unit because it would have looked dope.
Yeah, it has to have some, along with the aesthetic qualities, it has to have some performance aspect to it. So, So like taking it back to when I was a kid and when I was that 10-year-old kid and I picked up the Jordan 5, like my story is really that like that shoe transformed and changed the way that I looked at footwear and the way that I approached my life. Like I became an engineer because of the Jordan 5. Like, and I want to, my whole mission statement at Nike is really to inspire other people through the things that I make. Like I want to be able to have a kid in 4 or 5 years pick up a shoe that I played a part in, that I played a role in, to then become an engineer or to become a sneaker writer or to...
How was this built? How did this...
Like I want to be able to spark the same curiosity that I had when I was a 10-year-old kid. I want to be able to bring that to somebody else. That brings me the fulfillment part of it. The other part of it is being able to talk on forums like this and to tell people that like I worked in the aerospace industry for 10 years and I've been working at Nike for almost 2 years now, but Nike's been my dream job for almost 30 years. So just because something's been your dream doesn't mean that it has to leave
you. Has an expiration date.
It definitely doesn't have an expiration date. And all of the things that I told myself, like, you know, next year I'm going to be 40. And I was like, well, Nike doesn't want to hire a 37-year-old aerospace engineer. And these are all things that you're telling yourself. Like, there's probably somebody that's listening to, like, they don't want to hire a 28-year-old writer that works at a bank. Like, yeah, they do. Nike and all the footwear companies, they want to hire people that are going to be engaged, enthusiastic, passionate. Like, you know, like we can look at any real industry, right? Like, let's talk about basketball. Like, LeBron wouldn't be LeBron if he didn't love basketball. Kobe wouldn't be Kobe if he didn't love basketball. Yeah. If Kobe didn't love basketball, he'd be Smush Parker and he wouldn't be in the league, right? So like, think about the people that have enthusiasm, the people that are about it, the people that are doing great things. Like, every company wants to have those people on their roster, but nobody knows that you have this energy and this enthusiasm and this passion unless you show them and you tell them.
Show it. Be about it. Speak it into existence. Have your vision board. Hustle. Work. Right?
Absolutely. Work, 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 work,
work. Work, 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 work.
Not that kind of work. That's like the jabroni word.
Twerk, twerk. No, I'm just kidding. So that's one hell of a story. That's literally...
What questions do you have? Or is the podcast too long? Are we...
There's not a question part because, I mean, I already know you, so...
But you know me, but everybody else doesn't know me. So right? Maybe there's a question that you could be asking me to help. We can help inform the youth.
I had fun questions.
Okay.
That made it sound like your questions are not fun, Aaron. But I guess the...
Do you think that we gave a roadmap for people to go out there and to really make it happen? Like, I think the other part of it is that, like, it literally took me, you know, 3 to 4 years to achieve it and to get my dream job. So it's like, how hard are you willing to work and how long are you willing to work to achieve the things that you want in life? Mm-hmm. You know,
but that math may not seem like it adds up. Okay, 30 years of wanting to work there, 10 years of not working there. It could be 20 years of not working there. It could be whatever. I mean, if you don't take action, your 10 years of not working where you want to be or doing what you want to do could easily become 20 years of not doing it.
Yeah.
And then 30 years. And then 40, 50, 60, you're retired. And oh, crap, you never did it. Mm-hmm. So just taking the steps, like, I think you outlined that really well. Like, oh, I don't have this tool. Let me go get it. I don't have that skill. Mm-hmm. Let me go learn it.
Yeah. Or it's like, I mean, you can, like, everybody wants to see the progression. Everybody wants to see the progression. If you sketch a shoe today, post it on your Instagram, and tomorrow post a better shoe, mm-hmm. and you continue to do that for 3 weeks, you're number one, you've developed
damn, you're getting better too.
You've developed a habit, you're getting better. People can see the progression, because everybody can look at Kobe in his last game and see him put up 60, but from where he came from and the progression from shooting air balls in the playoffs to dropping 60 in his final game, like, you're able to see the growth and the progression. If Kobe was just dropping 60 every game, there wouldn't be anything special about it. It's to see that he came from nothing and became something awesome. That's what people like to see. So develop the habit of writing every day, Robbie, for you, posting on Instagram every day about sneakers.
That's tough for me personally. I hate posting every day.
Sketching a shoe every day. Sketching a few shoes every day. Like, getting yourself into the habit of continuing to work at it. Like, I would have things written up in my house that were like, what have you done today to get closer to achieving your goal? Like, you should be doing something every day to get a little bit closer to your goal. If it's looking at somebody's LinkedIn page, if it's updating your resume, if it's adding a new sketch to your portfolio, if it's researching a footwear brand, if it's taking an old shoe from the thrift store that's a $15 shoe and ripping it apart because you like the way that the tongue was assembled, it's any one of those different things to get you closer to where you want to be.
It's always possible if you make the moves. So
yeah,
we are getting close to time.
Okay.
So we are right there. I have some hot takes, though. Pretty much yes or no.
Okay.
1 to 2, 5 answer. I mean, 5-word answers.
All right.
We're just going to wrap it up with this.
Okay.
Because we now have a little bit of a theme here about the 1996 NBA draft. So who's the best player from the 96 draft? Is it Allen Iverson or is it Kobe?
It's definitely Kobe. Unfortunately for Allen Iverson, but it is Kobe. I mean, he's Kobe. Like,
this is a dude from Philly, too.
Well, and Kobe Bryant's from Philadelphia. True. He lived there for a portion of his life. But yeah, it's definitely Kobe, because Kobe never complained about practice. Kobe never, like, he played for the same team for, what was it, 19, 20 years. Like, there was a drop-off, but it wasn't such a substantial drop-off as there was with AI. You know, like, AI couldn't, I mean, Kobe never came off the bench, but AI didn't want to come off the bench. You know, so it's like, I like Kobe's story because it was like, he came in, he got partnered up with Shaq, they won 3, he made Shaq leave, he lost a whole bunch, he developed the team mentality, then he won some more, then he tried to teach others, and then he realized that he couldn't teach others, and then he's like, peace out, guys, I'm just going to drop 60 and leave.
Yeah, right. Can't deal with these scrubs anymore.
Who else came out in 96 besides AI or Kobe?
Steve Nash.
No. Who else?
Ray Allen.
No.
Jermaine O'Neal.
No.
Sharif Abdul-Rahim.
No.
Stephon Marbury. No, you can't go. You can't kind of.
Steph's global.
China God, yeah.
But yeah, it's Kobe.
It's Kobe. This year, coming up, we now know about Kawhi. We know about Paul George teaming up. 2019-20, Lakers or Clippers? Who's going to go further?
Lakers.
Lakers still go further?
The culture. The Clippers are, you know, like, you can put a Ferrari engine on a Volkswagen, but it's still a Volkswagen. You know what I'm saying? The Lakers are a Rolls Royce. They've always been a Rolls Royce. They have so many, like, and I understand that Steve Ballmer's coming in and he's trying to change the culture around, but dude, the chassis is, you're playing in the Lakers arena.
Yeah.
You're playing in the Lakers town. So until you move the Clippers to Riverside or to...
Riverside Raiders.
Or Yorba Linda, you know, the Yorba Linda Clippers. Like, until you get out of L.A. and you're not the L.A. Clippers anymore, like, you're still playing second fiddle to the Lakers. Like, yeah.
Agree. If you're a blended Laker fan, as in you like the Lakers and the Clippers, just stop liking the Lakers. Go to those losers or come back.
When have the Clippers made it past the first round of the playoffs?
They've made it to... either the second, I don't ever think they've made a Western Conference Finals.
Exactly.
Then they've gotten bounced in the second round every time. So Lakers all day. If you didn't work at Nike and you had to wear one of these two shoes, would you rather have to wear a New Balance or a Puma?
Puma.
Puma?
Yeah. Right now.
They're hot right now. We saw Zion wearing it before Summer League.
Some of them look good, yeah.
So, okay.
I saw some, but I mean, yeah, New Balances, that's not my... I've even growing up, like, I have a really good friend who would love to wear New Balances, and they were gray. I like that New Balance gray. I don't know, it was a 99.
Yeah.
One of those ones. But it's, yeah.
It's an umbrella term. It's that gray on the New Balance. It's on every shoe. So, who would get a first signature shoe, do you think? From the Philadelphia 76ers. Ben Simmons or Joel Embiid?
Joel Embiid.
Joel Embiid's going to get one first?
Because he's... Number one, Ben Simmons is with Nike, and I think we all know that there's a lot of basketball signature shoes for Nike. Embiid is more of a character, and who is he with?
Under Armour.
Under Armour. Under Armour can give him a shoe because Steph is the only other athlete that has a shoe. But it plays well too for whatever Under Armour wants to do because you've got a point guard in Steph. He's got a shoe. You need a big man with a shoe, so give it to Embiid.
The footwear pick and roll. So to speak. Absolutely. So, all right. Outside of the Jordan 5, you cannot pick the Jordan 5. What's your favorite shoe of all time?
Tom Sachs Mars Yard Overshoe.
The Overshoe.
The Overshoe. You didn't ask me about... I saw you had a question on there
I
about
did.
The Overshoe.
We ran a little long, but...
So we don't have any Overshoe time, but the Tom Sachs Mars Yard Overshoe is the most robust, engineered...
robust.
Engineered to the ground design shoe ever. Dyneema... Everything like there's you can't show me a shoe that has more engineering knowledge, know-how, practicality, beautiful artistry in it than the Tom Sachs Mars Yard Overshoe.
Keynote on the Overshoe, not the first gen, but the first gen's still good.
Well, that's the Mars Yard. I'm talking about the Overshoe. The Overshoe is the bag with the Dyneema, which is recently came out. There's the Mars Yard 1.0, the Mars Yard 2.0, and then we're on the Mars Yard Overshoe right now. The 1.0 is cool. The 2.0 is better. The 3.0 is best.
So you heard it here, folks. The Overshoe is where it's at. So with that said, we are out of time. So I'm Robbie. You can find me at RAHBEE702. Most importantly, follow Sneaker History. Tell a friend to tell a friend to listen to this episode.
Sneaker History on Twitter?
Sneaker History is on Twitter, Facebook, okay. Instagram. It's on everything.
Okay.
Aaron, you want people to research it. So it's Aaron Hankins, right? H-A-N-K-I-N-S.
It'll be in the show notes.
You will see it in the bio. History.
Like, I'm not going to give it to you. Like, people didn't give it to me. They were just like, oh, yeah, Jason Maiden. Go find Jason Maiden. And I'm like, okay, I got to go find Jason Maiden. I don't know how to spell his name. I got to figure it out. Like, that's...
Scavenger hunt.
Scavenger hunt, yeah.
Figure it out. But with that said, thank you so much, everybody listening. Look forward to more of our episodes dropping this week. Have a great rest of your day.
Peace.
What up, y'all? This is Nick again. Before you take off, I want to ask a few favors of you. First off, if you're still listening, I wanted to thank you for supporting us and continuing to listen to our podcast. If you're enjoying it, and I'm going to assume that you do if you're listening this long, please take a couple of minutes, head over to iTunes, drop us a review, leave a comment, make sure you're subscribed. It's the only way that we can really continue to grow our audience and reach new people and continue to grow the podcast. The second thing is, if you haven't already, head over to sneakerhistory.com/shop. You can pick up t-shirts, coffee mugs, stickers, and some other miscellaneous things. And all of these things go to help us continue this podcast, to continue the site, and just pay for miscellaneous expenses that come up. We're not trying to make a killing off of it, but it would be awesome to have your support. And who knows, maybe run into one of you on the streets one day rocking a Sneaker History t-shirt. Thanks again, and we'll catch you next time. Peace.
Hey, Nick here again. Before you take off, I want to thank you for listening to the Sneaker History Podcast. Be sure to hop into our Discord to answer this episode's The Last Shot question and get to know our community of sneaker enthusiasts. If you'd like more insights on the trending topics in the sneaker world, I've also recently started a newsletter to share my knowledge from nearly two decades of experience working in the footwear industry. You can find the link to that below or go to sneakerhistory.com/newsletter. And last but not least, tell someone you like their kicks today. You never know how far a simple compliment can take you, and we all know how good it feels to be on the receiving end of some appreciation. Thank you for all the support, and we will catch you on the next episode. Peace.